Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris. Today we have two guests in studio, Andrea Esplin and Rick Solis. Both are real estate investors in Southern California and have been doing that for a long time. Rick is also the appraiser that appraises most of our hard money loan situations. So welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Andrea, when did you get started in real estate investing?
Right around, I would say, 2001, 2002.
Okay. So you, first of all, that's probably your timing couldn't have been better because everything you touched probably started to go up a little bit, but as you were going through 03, 04, it started going up a lot.
Yeah, and I was at the time too ignorant to know that, so
but
I lucked out in that sense.
But one of the things that happens is you immediately assume that whatever you're experiencing is normal. I mean, if that's the only blueprint you've got, you think, okay, this is how it works. And so that's this has changed, obviously. You've gone from the most ridiculous upswing to the most incredible crash. So having gone through that, to me, that's an interesting experience. What was the first house you bought? Do you remember?
Yes, I do. Actually, I started out buying notes.
Really?
So that was the first house I bought was actually a result of I took your boot camp.
Okay.
After your boot camp, I came back from that, and I followed that to the T. My first house was 2003, I believe it was in December, and it was on Orange Street in Fontana.
Okay, boy, you do remember this.
I remember that.
Okay. Now, is that something, I'm just curious, as far as how you attracted it, was that a mailer?
Yes.
At the time?
Yes.
Okay.
It was all non-owner-occupied mailer.
Okay. And I understand you're really pretty good at that. Good at that conversation.
Yeah, I enjoy talking to people. I think that's never scared me.
What did you do prior to 2001?
I actually had a bookstore that did, it was books on tape. So everything in there was...
Where did you have it?
In Laverne.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I used to visit one in
Van Riverside.
Van Buren all the time.
I owned a franchise that was the
okay.
same thing.
Okay. And so how did that, some of the skills that you acquired there do anything for you in the property buying business?
Oh, absolutely, because it's all about if you can help someone out and the different ways that can be accomplished in closing that
okay.
transaction.
But you got started buying notes in 01. That's how you started.
Right.
Okay, we'll come back to that in a second. Rick, what about you? When did you get started in investing?
I bought my first house in 1988. It was a HUD repo in Montclair on Princeton Street.
How do you remember this?
I closed escrow 1 week after my 20th birthday. So
that's an early start.
That's why I remember. I really tried to get it closed before I turned 20.
Wow. Okay. I mean, that's a pretty early blueprint to want to do this.
Yes.
Where did that come from?
It was the late night infomercial stuff and I was looking at that age, I was looking for the get rich quick thing. I really thought I would be millionaire by 25 and just be done.
Well, you picked the wrong 88 was okay. 89 was really good. And then after that, it wasn't so hot.
Yeah. I really got cooking and really got good at it in 1990. Then I was really loading up.
Well, once again, I mean, you both have experienced the opposite. You came in at the end of a cycle and it would have been very easy to get blindsided by what you thought was true for 2 years, turned out not to be true for seven.
I got blindsided twice because I thought the 90s was just a fluke. It's like, well, you know, why real estate doesn't go down. It just happened that one time. So, and when things were booming again in 2001, I really thought this is the way it was going to be. And I kind of overestimated our success and didn't sell everything I should have. But yeah, I sold a lot of it. I knew bad times were coming, but I never suspected they would be this bad.
I don't think anybody did, you know, even though I wrote a report called The Crash, you know, I had the worst case scenario. You remember those three scenarios?
Yeah, we blew right past the worst case. We doubled that.
Worst case minus 50% was
we kind of thought it was going to be that middle scenario where, well, we're going to drop 20 or 30%. Won't be that big of a deal. And we'll just, you know, be back off to the races.
What did you do with that first property?
I held that the whole time just by the skin of my teeth. I put a tenant in there. After I lived there for the first year. I rent out the bedrooms to individual tenants. After that, I rented it out, and things were dropping. They were plunging, and I was having trouble keeping that afloat. So I gave the tenant an equity split deal, and the tenant took care of the maintenance and the payment, and we actually sold that in, I think, 2005 or 6, and that worked out pretty well.
That's a creative concept, too. I mean, you're, you know, 20 years old, and a few years later, you're talking about equity splits. So where did this come from?
I was loading up on the nothing down concepts from Robert Allen. I had tons of those books. I read those books, you know, every week I would go to the bookstore and pick up another book. And I was reading a lot of that creative financing stuff. And interestingly enough, I have no interest in any sort of creative financing or any of that stuff now. I just... you know, if there's not equity in the deal, I'm not interested.
Okay. You're 20 years old and you're pursuing real estate as an investor. Anybody in your life think you're out of your nut?
You know, at 20, I didn't care.
No, I know, but I'm just wondering, were you surrounded by anybody that supported what you were about to do?
No, but it just it didn't matter. You know, I was doing what I was doing. I didn't care what anybody thought. I don't even think I told most people because I kind of came from a lower income area, so I didn't tell any, you know, friends or anything like that. I kept it pretty quiet.
I remember, you know, selling electrical stuff in hardware stores, and I, you know, started thinking about this stuff, and it was, you know, every time I mention it, it's just like, oh, geez. You know, you just wouldn't get much support for it. You just, a lot of time it is solo for a while.
Yeah.
Before you start cashing a few checks, and all of a sudden, people come around, so that's kind of nice. Andrea, when did you guys meet each other?
Well, Rick, actually, we met through my bookstore, and I started buying seconds as a result of Rick actually put me in contact with the gentleman, and then he referred me to your boot camp, and so that's kind of, we didn't plan to be in business together, it just kind of happened.
So when you started buying seconds in what year was that? That was 2001?
Yeah.
So that was a real safe time to do that.
Right.
So that worked out well, as long as they were not owned past, let's say, 06.
Yeah, all those got refinanced. And
that was good.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that, in a way, that brings up an important topic, is that timing has a lot to do with how things work out. So you can have the perfect blueprint for the wrong era and have a real problem. So that's what's unique about this business, is that timing aspect where you go, okay, yeah, it's a perfect strategy, except for it's not going to work for 3 years. Are you playing around with notes now?
Yeah, just starting to buy them now. There's actually a lot more available to buy, but it's harder. I've noticed it's much harder to get the borrowers to make any sort of payment now. Even if it's in their best interest, you can't make them. You can't get them to even pay like $100 a month. They're so used to not paying that it's a bit of a challenge.
That's an interesting psyche change, if you will. So writing it all the way to the bitter end, in other words, I'm going to lose this house and I'm going to milk it until it's done, no matter how good the situation is. Is that because they're still way upside down on the note?
I truly think it's because they've been dealing with the banks who are not doing anything about them not paying.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they're used to that. So when we send them a letter and say, hey, we're going to start to foreclose, they really think that means a year from now.
Yeah, so there's, you know, why spend whatever, $2,000 in the meantime? Well, that could not bode well for how many foreclosures ultimately show up. When did you guys do your first property together?
That was the house in Orange in 2003.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we held it a year and then sold it.
We bought that house, I think, at like 60 cents on the dollar. And I remember as we're walking out the door, the people are giving Andrew a hug. And I couldn't understand. It's like, wow, you just gave away 40 grand and hugging her. I think they were planning vacations and picnics and stuff with her.
Okay. That kind of brings up some, you know, you're partners in a business that's hard to be partners in. It really is. Most of the time, it doesn't work. Because what I've noticed about partnerships, and this isn't true about you, is you have two people that would be incapable of doing the business alone, so they partner together and don't do it well in pairs. But that's not really true. Both of you guys are very capable of doing it on your own. So what works out? Who does what? How did you guys decide that?
Well, in the beginning, like I said, we didn't really plan it, but I came back from that, and we put together a letter. My employees did all the mailings, all that. I really was very ignorant with real estate. I knew how to close a deal. That was my only gift, truly,
which
honestly.
Is kind of a big one.
And
that's the main one.
Yeah, it is.
Because I thought, I'll figure, you know, I'm smart enough, I can figure out everything else, but if I can't close anything, then what's the point of even having the knowledge? Rick truly knew real estate values. So we would both take phone calls, and then he did all the values in the beginning. Honestly, he did. And I sent all the letters. I did all the negotiating. And it kind of worked out that I didn't really know that we were buying this house so cheap. Because I thought I was doing a service to everybody. I really did. I'm going to solve your problem.
Mm-hmm.
So we both had different strengths, and that worked out well. But I think is why we've stayed together is... we're both have the same type of character.
Right. I think that's an important pairing. But two different skill sets. So do you enjoy negotiating, or is that something that's...
I really don't. I did best, and I usually picked up the best deals where it was people just calling, and they would tell me what they had and just mail me an offer. And so I did best where all I had to do was get them an offer in the mail, perform quickly, and close it. I'm not really good at establishing relationships and getting back and forth. I'm kind of just... cut to the chase. What do you got? What do you want? Here's your offer. I can close in 10 days. She does best closing the hard ones, or where they need to feel very comfortable with the person they're selling the house to. I'm not good at that.
Mm-hmm.
That's not my thing.
And that's the most important skill. But it's interesting that you pulled it off without real estate knowledge. A lot of people don't realize that they have a lot of the tools that are important in the buy and sell business. But they think, okay, well, I don't know real estate, so I can't do it. And I had a very similar experience when I went to work for that Orange County company in, like, 1981. I didn't know a grant deed from a trust deed, but I was able to understand the concept of what we had, as we had cash and they had equity. For some reason, I understood that. I would have made the same decision on most of the deals that I was sitting across from. It made sense for me to get a yes answer. And I think that's kind of what you're saying, is that you're looking at their problem going, this makes sense to me. That this would be an acceptable solution to what you've got. And I think the belief of that is real important.
Yeah, it's the belief. It truly is. You have to believe that you truly are solving their problem. And I truly do.
Well, you know, one of the things that's, you guys have, you've done some wholesaling.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, in a way, you're making that same decision just at a different level. You understand you're leaving part of the pie for somebody else, and it's perfectly okay. Once you cross that barrier, to me, that's a big step, because you realize, okay, there's circumstances where, honestly, a piece of it is so much better if it's quick than the whole pie, you know, 6 months down the road. And so when you do some wholesaling, all of a sudden you kind of really get it. You go, okay, well, I understand the service now, and I don't even mind being on the other side of it. And I really think that makes you more persuasive, because you don't, it's not like you're trying to get somebody to do something and you're shocked when they say yes.
Right.
You kind of go back and go, that makes perfect sense. When you started doing the business and it was in the early 2000s, was it your intent to keep these properties and ride them?
I think initially we were just going to sell them most, but the ones that I had always seen that were the most profitable were the ones that were they held on for a little while. So I think initially we did sell quite a few, but those we kind of regretted years later. I mean, we walked out with maybe 10 or 20 grand profit, where the houses we held for even just a year, we walked out with over 100 grand in profit. I mean,
yeah, and that was just an era that we really had never seen before, and I guess we probably would be hard-pressed to see again.
I think so.
But it was fun while it lasted. Remember that house you guys found that we auctioned?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we had a little over 100 grand spread to split.
Yeah, that was one of our last ones.
Yeah,
too.
That was.
We took a break after that house.
That was pretty cool. You remember what it felt like, the mood of the investors at the time? Let's say in, you know, that 2004-05, you know, where you go to clubs meetings or you were doing appraisals, and what was the mindset of, you know, this continuing for a length of time?
They seemed like they had just come out of like a big pep rally seminar for like Amway or something, and they were just pumped up. It was not going to end, and it was off to the races, and it was never going to end. All you had to do was get anything, and you were going to make $100,000.
That made having any kind of discernment not necessary, because if it had a front door, it was going to make dough.
That's true.
Yeah, it was hard to make mistakes.
Yeah, and I think
honestly, hard to make mistakes.
And that's one of the hardest things coming from the era that you got experience in, is that you could misprice it, you know, and get forgiven as far as you thought it was worth this, but then really the initial price wasn't, but then you got bailed out because it went up 5%
or
a
even
month.
Blessed in
yeah.
many cases.
Well,
because it did go up.
Yeah, that's what I mean. In other words, it exceeded that. The other thing is, during that era, you don't have to repair properties nearly as well as you do right now, because the retail buyer was of the same mindset. I have got to get something. So if you had a front door, man, they were not picky about what was on the other side of it very much.
Yeah, we did not fix our properties up. There was no granite.
No.
There was no
wood floors.
Yeah.
And they usually didn't hand us a repair list from the home inspector. I mean, there was very rarely any of that.
Yeah. Well, that's hard to overcome mentally sometimes when you come from an era like that to what amounts to the Great Depression of California real estate. So how have you guys survived the mentally, as far as, because you said some of it you didn't do correctly. So there was things you did do right, but then you probably got some hits on some things. So just, has there been any mental journey there? You're going, oh, wow, I was worth this, and I'm not now, that type of thing.
I stopped looking.
I
used to keep very careful track of that, and I stopped looking in 2007.
Yeah, we've had our pains. Don't get me wrong. We've definitely.
I don't know.
And, you know, they've been really blessings, because you learn quickly when you have those types of pain.
I think that was one of the questions, you know, when I had Mike and Tony on that I didn't get to, but I was going to ask them, in your experience, did you learn more by going through bad times than good? And I think you've just answered that. You really, in good times, there's not as much to learn, because you think it's you and you're just like, I'm so good. And then all of a sudden it changes. You go, wow, if I'm so good, how come I'm sitting in this?
Yeah, that is exactly, you know, there was a lot of houses that I kept that I think, man, I just should have dumped those. And, you know, probably 7 or 8 of them. But had I not kept those, life would be so much better now. But, you know.
And that's the thing. You just have to kind of go, okay, write that off for experience. And, you know, I know you guys have a new plan, and that's going to get you in the same place too.
Yeah, the new plan is very, very good. So I think we're going to do very well.
And what is the plan? You guys are doing mostly buying and holding now?
I still have to retail, Bruce, honestly, to make a living.
Okay.
I do. So I still have to do that. But we've been acquiring rentals. Well, last year in particular, we really hit it pretty hard in the acquiring rentals.
Yeah, we stole Tony's plan.
Hey, might as well borrow from the best.
Yeah,
that's nothing
exactly.
wrong with that plan.
Tony's plan.
Yeah, because for me, this was the first chance I could buy a property and have it cash flow.
Yes.
And that's, when I started out, I couldn't, and I knew that the long-term wealth was in holding.
Yeah,
and cash flow.
In this cycle, that's really true, because the margins are really tight for buy-sell, because there's so many people trying to, you know, buy-hold. They'll pay a different level than we can, you know, buying and selling. So that margin is tight. And for the first time in memory, you can buy something and you don't even need a super deal on it to cash flow. If you get a deal, then it makes even more sense.
First time since I've been investing. It's never since 1988 I've been able to buy something and the rent is way lower than the house payment, even with a hard money loan.
Yeah, I was going to say.
The rent is way higher than the house payment.
Exactly.
Almost double.
Yeah, and yet you still don't have people breaking the doors down to buy, or if they want to, they don't get qualified. So
it's not very much demand.
Yeah, I can't imagine the perspective of coming into the market for the first time here, because you would get a picture that this is normal when it's anything but. Just like you, when you came into 2001 through 2006, you know, you were just thinking, well, dang, this is easy. Just touch this. And now there are going to be people going, well, you know, it rents for $1,200, my payment's $650, and that's normal. No, it's like never happened in the 30 years that I've touched this business.
No, that's true. Not since the 70s. So I think there's a lot of people that are, I mean, people that could buy houses or even just a home to live in are just not motivated at all. And they don't realize what a gift this is. I mean,
yeah, that the mental, there's a lot of this is mental, both in lender policies and buyer decisions. We get, you know, we're in escrow right now with probably 25 people. And for the first time in their life, 25 people are listening to every news article that's negative about real estate, biting their nails and deciding, should I borrow money at 4.5% at a price that's 60% off? You know, and that's they're really tossing and turning over it because they don't have support. Like people make decisions in 05 because it's overwhelming that that's the right decision, even though you're paying a ridiculous price. Now it's just the opposite. You're knowing your rent's going to be higher than your payment would turn out to be, and yet signing those docs is so permanent that people hesitate to do it.
I don't think they realize, though, they're going to always need a place to live.
Well, you know, that's some of the things that when you speak in front of people a lot, you know, you sort of ask. One of the questions I started asking, I said, any of you guys that are renting houses willing to give a 30-year fixed rent? And, you know, everybody laughs, and that's like a joke. Well, can you imagine if your life got blessed with a 30-year fixed payment at this level? Because at some point, you're going to make an awful lot more money. And, you know, when I first bought a home with Marcia, we were sitting there and the payment seemed pretty high and it was $209. And then pretty soon,
wow.
And then we stepped up to the next house and it was $310 and it was as stressful. And then all of a sudden, 5 years later, you realized, wow, we got two car payments on our hands. I mean, it's a joke, but that's the chance people have now. But that mental problem is they're surrounded by everybody that's gotten damaged by the product now.
Yeah.
So the memory of that 05, 06 era is turned into...
Yeah, that's gone.
Yeah, that optimism is now turned into, you know, how long has it been since you've made your payment? And, you know, or when are you getting booted out? Your renters... I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no. Okay. Well, I was thinking when that optimism came back really fast, though, last year when that tax credit was out. I mean, those buyers flew back into the market so fast. And I don't know what's changed their minds so much now, but it is kind of unusual that they're just either they can't qualify or they're just not interested.
Yeah, I think $8,000 was a down payment, basically. You know, if you think about we've talked about this, having a nothing down loan program, they should look at how those loans have performed, by the way. The ones that people got $8,000, I bet they performed wonderfully.
Yeah. Well, and they got $8,000 back and paid $20,000 more for the house, and a lot of them towards the end. But
they still are going to make that payment.
Nothing out of pocket.
Right.
You know,
but it's still safe. What's interesting is the mindset that's currently going on is it's all geared toward down payments being bigger in the future. 20% down being mandatory in most cases.
That really concerns me.
Yeah,
it does.
Me too.
Does me too. But especially since they're making that decision based on faulty information. There's an assumption that loan pile is safer than any other one. The best performing pile of loans for 40 years is a VA nothing down loan. And it's because of their underwriting standards. It beats the 20% down Fannie Mae loan.
I didn't know that. That's good to know.
It is good to know. Well, when we go to the Nixon Library, we'll have that chart. Because I want the people on that panel to see that chart and take that to wherever they go, because that really fights this nonsense, and it's undeniable. Wait a minute. Nothing down beats 20% down, and why? Because they have underwriting standards that make sense. It's just that simple. So use their underwriting standards, have nothing down, and you will have people come out of the woodwork, and you'll have a lot of people buy houses. Wow, we're down to 30 seconds. I didn't realize that. Rick and Andrea, we've gone through our first segment. Thank you very much for joining us. And we'll, on the next segment, we'll talk a little bit about more what you're doing on a daily basis. And also just a little bit about what your thoughts going forward as far as being a real estate investor and how it might change in the next decade as opposed to the one you just experienced. So thanks for joining.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.